Hello, I'm Lynn Ahmadou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we'll have my exclusive interview with renowned Congolese microbiologist, Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, who discovered Ebola viral disease in 1976. But first, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the new outbreak of the hemorrhagic Ebola virus has killed at least 4 people. Meanwhile, in North Africa, Guinea has recorded 5 deaths in the first resurgence of Ebola since the 2013-2016 outbreak. Guinea's neighboring countries are taking steps to prevent a regional outbreak of Ebola after the deadly virus also infected several others in the West African nation. The last outbreak from 2013 to 2016 killed more than 11,000 people as it spread from Guinea to neighboring Liberia and Sierra Leone, with cases also in Mali, Nigeria, and Senegal. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
As Guinea launched an Ebola vaccination drive Tuesday, after an outbreak in the West African nation's southern Zaire-Kore region, its neighbors were also preparing. The last Ebola outbreak in 2013 also started in Guinea and killed 11,300 people over 3 years as it spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone. There were also cases in Mali, Nigeria, and Senegal, and as far away as Europe and the United States. The Ebola outbreak this month was traced to a funeral for a nurse who is suspected to have died of the virus. Out of 4 confirmed and 4 probable cases, a total of 5 people have died. Zaire-Kore, the capital of the region, is the second biggest city in Guinea and a regional transport hub. Neighboring Sierra Leone declared a level 2 emergency response. Doctors Without Borders' Lindis Hiram in Kenema District, one of the region's hardest hit by the last outbreak, says they are now better prepared.
Both the government, the Ministry of Health, and the population themselves, they are, will be more prepared this time for Ebola just because of the fact that they lived through that really large and painful outbreak in 2014-16. So, and this we see already, that people know what it is now.
In neighboring Mali, which was largely spared from the last Ebola outbreak, authorities were focused on the country's borders. Dr. Akhrodi Ag-Iknine is the director of Mali's National Institute for Public Health. He says a team of health workers went to the border the day after Guinea declared the February 14th outbreak.
Le lendemain, nous sommes rendus à la frontière de Kouré Mali.
Iknine says, the next day, we went to the border at Kouré Mali, between Mali and Guinea, to see some of the measures being taken. We noted, he says, that the measures are in place to reinforce the border with equipment and personal protective equipment, PPE, and to reactivate the vigilance team there, who were already set in motion in 2014 during the last epidemic. During the last outbreak, non-Ebola-related healthcare was severely impacted because of the strain the deadly virus put on the region's healthcare systems. While Guinea works to prevent the outbreak from spreading, Doctors Without Borders Hiram says in Sierra Leone, they will remain community-focused.
We know that the lessons learned from last time are very clear, and it's to involve the community in all aspects from day one, because they are the ones affected and they are the ones we need to listen to and engage with in order to stop the transmission.
Ebola vaccines were developed after the 2013 West African outbreak and have already been used in the Democratic Republic of the Congo's 2018 outbreak. The World Health Organization delivered 11,000 doses of Ebola vaccine to Guinea on Monday evening and has teams helping with the vaccination campaign. Annie Risenberg for VOA News, Bamako.
For more on Ebola, I spoke with renowned Congolese microbiologist Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, who discovered Ebola viral disease in 1976. Dr. Muyembe is the general director of DRC's National Institute of Biomedical Research and coordinates the response of the Ebola and COVID-19 epidemics in his country.
Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, thank you so much for joining us. The DRC recently announced the resurgence of the Ebola epidemic in the west part of the country. What is the current situation?
Well, the situation,
is, of course, worrisome. And it happened in Biena Health Zone and in the Katwa Health Zone, town of Butembo.
Dans la ville de Butembo.
So in North Kivu.
North Kivu.
So we just did the sequencing at the National Institute of Biomedical Research in Kinshasa. And the sequencing shows that this epidemic is a continuation of the 2018-2020 epidemic. And so this lady was infected either by her husband, but the concern is that her husband is still negative. but we have ruled out that the infection comes from wildlife. So it doesn't have a connection. But the woman's virus does have some connections with the virus that circulated during the 2018-2020 epidemic. And we are really sure of that.
What were the points to remember from the experiences of the past 2 years in Ituri and North Kivu?
First of all, it was an epidemic that happened in a conflict zone, and the insecurity was really the biggest challenge. Also, the fact that the epidemics were the focal point were scattered, and therefore control was difficult. Contact tracing was difficult. And also, at the end of the epidemic, what we saw that we had never seen before with other epidemics was the number of survivors who still carried the virus. So people were cured, but still had the potential to transmit the virus to their partners. It was really something that we haven't seen before. Of course, the positive aspect is that we tested two new vaccines, which were found to be effective. And also, we tested five molecules, two of which showed efficacy.
What is your biggest concern about this resurgence, especially during COVID-19?
This is a great concern for us, especially since the COVID and Ebola crises are occurring on a ground plagued by permanent conflict and insecurity, also the mistrust of the population. It slows down our momentum. It slows down and our ability to quickly overcome this epidemic. And I think the provincial health ministers, all the health teams are on site to conduct investigations to better understand how this epidemic is unfolding on the ground.
Dr. Muyembe, it's been almost 45 years since Ebola was discovered. And as a matter of fact, you are the one who discovered the virus. Today, are there some factors that are still unknown to you?
Oui, je pense qu'il y a encore des facteurs qui sont inconnus, hein? Le plus grand facteur.
Yes, I think there are still factors that are unknown. The biggest factor, the scientific enigma in our century here, will be the reservoir. Which insect carries the virus? That is really the question mark, and we are still, my team and I, trying to find out more and uncover this mystery by analyzing bats, etc. And also, as we see latest cases, which are causing a lot of reactions, how this epidemic has remained silent for over 6 months is a question mark. And now there is a resurgence, and these resurgences also leave us, the scientific community, with many questions.
How is the experience of the fight against Ebola used to face COVID-19 presently?
For us, we are used to epidemics and to organize teams and organize communication and to have dialogue with the population. I believe that this is an asset that allows us to manage the epidemic well.
In
America, you have seen the number of cases and you have the number of deaths. It's sad. But here, we can say that the epidemic is well managed and finally under control.
When you are dealing with COVID-19 and an Ebola outbreak, what are the priorities?
COVID is going to live with us a little longer, but Ebola must quickly be contained. As I told you, we have the tools. We have the tools to vaccinate and to treat the sick. Thus, we break the chain of transmission, and the virus can go back into the forest, into the bush. Then we will be able to deal much more seriously with COVID-19. So the priority is first Ebola, and then COVID.
Now, a real challenge facing the African continent, and it's not really an African problem, it's vaccination. There is an Ebola vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine, that are in deployment. So how do you address communities in order to change perception of the vaccine that comes from the West to hurt the African population? We've seen these rumors going across the continent and around the world.
Well, it's very tricky because Africans often follow what some European or American fanatics says on television or in social networks, and it's amplified here in Africa.
Africa.
Most people say it's not to sterilize the African populations or they aren't the same vaccine that we use over there, that we use here in Africa, and so on. I told them, listen, if the vaccine arrives, I will be the first to get vaccinated because I understand the importance of the vaccine. So I believe we will lead by example. The president's family is getting vaccinated. Of course, there are some side effects, but the side effects are not going to kill someone. So if you weigh the side effect against the benefit of the vaccine, the benefit of the vaccine far outweighs the side effects. And so it's up to us to convey the true messages of peace and security in our populations to get them to accept this vaccine.
Pour les amener à accepter, n'est-ce pas, ce vaccin.
It's not easy, but the DRC authorities are trying to convince the population through dialogue, through explanations on the radio and on social media.
What do you expect from people during an Ebola epidemic or any other epidemic for that matter? People usually are waiting for help from the government. The government might wait for help from partners, but what do you, as someone in the field who is responsible for the health security of populations, expect from the communities?
With local communities, the problem is really, you know, the level of information. It matters a lot. It's really to get them to better understand the pros of a vaccination, because it's very important.
Lorsque nous avons une épidémie mondiale,
when we have a global epidemic, it's not good for a part of the continent to get vaccinated, to cut the chain of transmission and make the virus go away. And one part of the continent, some countries refuse, because even if in Europe they become free from the virus, the risks of reintroduction of the virus in Europe will always be great from the countries that gone through with vaccination. So we are in a world that has become like a big village. You can't have double standard because the risk is going to stay permanent in the world. And overall, global health is more important than the individual health of a country. This is what we must make people understand so we can fight together to eliminate the virus, which is the enemy of the world.
As I mentioned, you were the one who discovered Ebola virus over 40 years ago. How do you read the evolution of Ebola virus disease and the response in the DRC after all these years?
Okay, you see, when you went through such a disease, you witnessed its birth. You have witnessed its development, how measures have been put in place to stop it. You understand the power of science and medicine.
In
1976, when I saw the first cases of Ebola, no one could think that Ebola could be a threat to humanity. We thought it was something happening in the equatorial forest that will stay there. But with the various means of travel and the way sick people are treated in hospitals and other factors, Ebola became a global threat. And researchers started to study this virus and develop the vaccine and the drug to treat. This is significant progress. I'm proud to have witnessed this progress, not only witness it, but also to have been an actor of this progress.
Before I finish, Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, there was an epidemic in West Africa that started in 2013, 2014, and lasted about 2 years. Now we are seeing a resurgence in Guinea. What is your reaction?
It confirms the recurrence trend. Before, we didn't know that Ebola could come back to the same pace multiple times. But now we realize the risks. You can end an epidemic, but you cannot end the virus. The epidemic is over, but the virus is still there. So it can come back. So we have to be vigilant. After an epidemic, continue to follow, continue to monitor, and especially develop laboratories to make diagnoses at the center of the epidemic. Back then, for example, in Kikwit in 1995, we took the sample. We needed to send it to CDC in Atlanta, in USA. And then wait a week or two to receive the results. Meanwhile, the number of cases will increase. But now we can do the diagnostic locally, and especially in my institute here, the National Institute of Biomedical Research, INRB, in Kinshasa. We are able to do the sequencing and have results in 3 days. For example, for this latest case, we did the sequencing ourselves and we know where the virus came from, etc. So this is progress that we have made and that we did not have before.
I wanted to ask you one last question. The use of plasma from people who have recovered from Ebola is a method that you have initiated in your part of the world. Where are we with this approach to treatment?
Well, you know, in our scientific evolution, a lot of times we abandon old methods for new ones, etc. Antibody treatment has existed for a long time. When someone has an illness, they develop antibodies, and those antibodies can still protect. If you take the serum from this patient, for example, someone who has measles, you take his blood, his serum, his plasma, it will protect this child. This is how, faced with the mortality rate we saw during the Ebola outbreak in Kikwit, we wondered why we never thought of it. Why not do that? And so my team, which was led at the time by doctors, mon papa, who is now in France, made a transfusion. We did, and the transfusion, because we did not have the capacity to make the plasma, i.e. to separate the plasma from the blood. And out of 8 patients treated, 7 survived. But our friends, our European partners, did not agree with that because they said viruses can survive in those who are cured, etc. We took the blood of convalescents, Ebola survivors. We gave it to the acutely ill. Fortunately, all the blood that we used was analyzed in Atlanta CDC, and there was no virus in it. And we had also removed things like hepatitis, AIDS, and all the tests were negative, and we did a transfusion. And so, where the patient died at 80% rate with our approach, we rather saved that. I believe we had 12% of death instead of 80%. But later, our friends and partners, especially Americans, experimented in laboratories with monkeys. They did not find any effects, and they said it didn't work. Plasma didn't work. And so we could no longer start this experiment. Until the day when, after 10 years, 15 years, there is something that must have escaped us. And an American friend encouraged me to revisit it. And this is how we developed the AMB-114 monoclonal antibody. We tried in the East during the epidemic of North Kivu, and it worked very well. And now, our monoclonal antibody treatment, which we developed with the NIH in the United States, has been approved by the US FDA, the famous body that approves drugs and vaccines. And that's the molecule that can treat Ebola and the people can be cured with it.
Is this product part of your strategy in the global response during various outbreaks of Ebola? Also, even in Guinea, will Guinea have access to this treatment?
Yes. Regarding Guinea, President Tshisekedi is also the current president of the African Union. Of course, he takes matters into his own hands. And in the next few days, there will be a team of Congolese experts who will go to Guinea to bring this molecule. We have about 300 doses here at National Institute of Biomedical Research in Kinshasa. We have already sent doses to North Kivu. We also send some shipment to Guinea to treat the sick. This is something we can do in the framework of African solidarity to help our friends in Guinea.
Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, thank you so much for responding to our questions today.
It was a pleasure.
That was Dr. Jean-Jacques Muyembe, General Director of DRC's National Institute of Biomedical Research, who discovered Ebola viral disease in 1976. It's time now for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Peter Clote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. These are some of the stories we'll be covering on this Sunday. Opposition groups expresses concern about Madagascar's handling of the global coronavirus pandemic. And the Togolese opposition demands an independent inquiry into allegations of state corruption. Nightline Africa is VOA's weekend Africa show that provides news, features and entertainment news as well as sports about Africa and the world. Tune in.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to the COVID-19 pandemic. Cameroon education authorities are pleading with parents to return their children to schools after thousands fled over the weekend on rumors that the kids would be vaccinated against COVID-19. The exodus shows the challenge Cameroon authorities are facing to educate the public on the virus and irrational fears of vaccines. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroonian authorities said several thousand children from at least 15 schools had not shown up to class Monday morning after social media posts that the schools would vaccinate students against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. 25-year-old police officer Willibrod Tabot says his neighbor told him about a COVID vaccination plan at school, so he kept his children at home. He spoke via a messaging application from the western town of Kumba.
Right now, the scientific world is not yet certain on the vaccine. As of now, there are different versions. We hear China has its own version, the United States has their own version, maybe Russia has their own version of the vaccine. So I don't trust it, so my children can't take it now. And there are also rumors on social media saying this vaccine is trying to cut down the population of blacks in Africa. So I'm really scared of it.
A member of the anti-COVID campaign team at Cameroon's Ministry of Health, Eric Tandy, says the reports of a vaccination plan at schools are false. He says they sent health teams to schools and communities to counter the disinformation.
With a lot of fake information on social media, the population have some degree of hesitation, but the Ministry of Public Health, in collaboration with all actors and partners, are doing their best to sensitize the population in order to kick out COVID-19 within their communities.
Authorities on Friday said the towns of Kumba and Bafia, 120 kilometers north of Yaoundé, were the most affected by the false claims. Only 200 out of 1,000 children were in class Monday at the government high school in Bafia. An economics teacher at the school, Martina Kube, says social media platforms are being used to send schoolwork to the absent students.
We create WhatsApp groups for each class. We snap the homework and we send it to their parents. We make sure that the children should read. The parents then verify to make sure that the child copied it well.
Kube said teachers also send WhatsApp messages asking parents to bring their children back to school. Health Minister Manauda Malachi, on his Twitter account last week, announced a vaccination plan against COVID-19, but he gave no details on the availability and origin of the vaccines or when the inoculations would start. Manauda said there was a resurgence of COVID-19 in Cameroon, with more than 6,000 new cases and 36 deaths since January. Cameroonian authorities say too many people are failing to use face masks, wash their hands, and socially distance. Cameroon has confirmed nearly 34,000 COVID cases and more than 500 deaths since the outbreak last March. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Millions of COVID-19 vaccines are to be rolled out this year as Africa tries to end the pandemic. But Interpol is warning of an onslaught of criminal activity linked to vaccines. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
About 2 months ago, police tracked cargo from O.R. Tambo Airport near Johannesburg to a warehouse nearby. When they opened the boxes, says Mulungisi Wando, of the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, the officers called for help.
Since when I got there, then they saw refilled syringes and they are written in Chinese because the owner of the consignment was Chinese. The two people that were at the site, the owner of the warehouse and the Chinese owner, were arrested on spot.
Wando says the syringes arrived via Singapore disguised as cosmetic injections. His investigators say they'd been advertised on social media as COVID-19 vaccines.
They've been trying to trace if there were units released into the country. Remember, the risk now is if people are injected with those vaccines, firstly, we don't know where they are manufactured. Secondly, we don't know what were their storage conditions from where they've manufactured up to where they were stored. The risk is the stability of biological, as you know. If they are stored in not good conditions, it's not viable and it can change to something else. And the risk is the immune systems of people reacting to those things.
The World Health Organization calls Africa the dumping ground for almost half of all substandard and falsified medicines found globally every year. This is because medicine regulations are very weak across most of the continent, says Cynthia Genele, Director of Africa Engagement at the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations.
We found very toxic substances even in the cases of medicines. So first you are not cured, your disease is continuing, and then you have seen cases of people who were dying because of the product they were taking, which was a toxic product.
The WHO says three quarters of all fake medicines are made in China and India, two countries expected to supply most of Africa's COVID-19 shots. Marius Schneider leads a Mauritius-based law firm that prosecutes cases of falsified medicines for some of the world's largest pharmaceutical firms. He's keeping a close watch on Africa's vaccine rollouts.
The demand will be high, access will be limited. Everybody will want to have his shot, if I may say so. In that kind of situation, this vaccine is a liquid gold for these criminal syndicates. Huh? They will exploit this situation by either stealing the vaccine or by counterfeiting it.
South African pharmacologist and WHO medicines advisor Andy Gray says governments want to give vaccines as fast as possible, so they'll ignore rules that would usually apply.
Wherever you've got a problem in the distribution chain where the normal actors in the chain are being bypassed, that creates a vulnerability. That's a very ripe opportunity to bring a totally falsified product into that market, because it's going through an illegal step anyway.
Nigerian investigative journalist Ruona Meyer has infiltrated organized crime groups in West Africa. Her work has exposed government members and pharmaceutical company employees working in concert with criminals to traffic illicit codeine.
So we already have the same time-old systems that are a recipe for fake production and stealing, interception, like pharma narcotics, like COVID vaccines. Definitely, it's going to happen because we've seen it already happen with personal protective equipment like masks and tests as well.
Schneider says COVID-19's not a pandemic to organized crime, but an opportunity to make 1,000% profit on a single falsified jab.
As soon as this whole problem popped up, you had criminal syndicates everywhere and even sophisticated governments, Germany, Belgium, have been set up by these syndicates. When you come to developing countries, the government is also involved in all of these activities. And you have corruption, bribery, and the like. Huh? But, you know,
early last year, Oxford University infectious diseases specialist Professor Paul Newton warned that the world risked a parallel pandemic of falsified COVID-19 medications unless there was a global plan for production and equitable distribution of, particularly, vaccines. No such plan was ever made, and countries continue their individual, isolated scrambles for jabs. Experts say Newton's warning is becoming a prediction, especially in Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently. and strive to make every day a healthy day.